She looked for the nearest non-match, which was back on T3, where a cross corridor on Deck 3 that the ship's database said ran through Forming Workshop 2B ended on Patak's data cube before reaching the workshop. According to her data, Forming Workshop 2B couldn't be reached except by a detour around dye storage. Only one way to find out. She glanced at the time. She could get up there and back to her assigned mess in T2 before the next meal. Back to the hub end of T2, then clockwise to the base of T3. She was getting the hang of this. She located the personnel lift tube beside a cluster of four labeled Cargo Only. The personnel lift light changed to green, and Esme punched in. When the second light came on, she stepped in and felt a quick double lurch of her innards before she came to rest at the hatch 8 decks down. Waiting there was another lieutenant, male, with a couple of ensigns in tow.
I don't know you. Are you assigned here?
Esme hoped she didn't have the bug-eyed look that usually followed a short hop on the lift tube.
Just aboard, sir. Esme Sweeza, assigned to Hull and Architecture.
Oh, yes.
He extended a hand. He had a good handshake.
Ty Galanifer. Short for something horrible and familial. Don't ask. I heard you were coming. I'm with 14th Maintenance Staff. Are you busy at the moment?
I'm assigned to Major Patak.
Yep, you're busy. I'm not surprised she's already got you running all over the ship. But meet these two, also newbies. Ensigns Anson and Partrade.
The two ensigns returned Esme's handshakes. Anson had a chilly, damp palm, and Partrade's felt as if he'd lined it with saddle leather.
See you at mess. Come on, guys. Down the tube we go.
Esme turned away and looked around her. She needed the starboard main axial passage for T3. On this deck, the corridor was wide enough to drive a small truck through, and the inlaid guidelines for transport carts, along with marked pedestrian lanes on either side, suggested that small trucks did in fact drive it, at speed. Esme glanced back and saw a flatbed carrier loaded with canisters rolling smoothly along the guideline, its red sensor blinking like a mad red eye. Ahead, Esme saw it slow and swing into a large hatch on the outboard side. When she got to the hatch and looked in, she saw a long robotic arm plucking canisters off the carrier and placing them on racks. She couldn't stand there all day. She would have the rest of her tour to figure out what was going on in there. She set off again. The first cross passage was double the width of the one she was using, with warning lights as well as mirrors at the corners. Esme glanced at the mirrors, even though the lights were green. Far down the inboard side, something large and lumpy with flashing yellow lights sat motionless, with little dark figures swarming over it. She blinked, startled again at the distances inside this ship. Esme almost missed the second cross corridor. A dark slit opened on either side, barely one pedestrian wide, and lit only by wide-spaced lights. Again, she stopped and peered at it. On a cramped escort, this might be a normal width, but it didn't fit with the others she'd seen. The third aft was the most normal so far, if anything about this ship was normal. Three could have walked abreast if they didn't mind banging hands now and then. Evenly spaced hatches opened off it on either side. The fourth aft was much like it, a passage that might have been on any ship save for its length. The fifth, the one she'd come to see, she turned inboard. Forming Workshop A was right where both Patak's cube and the ship's own schematic said it should be. Esme wasn't sure what a forming workshop was, but she could tell that it was important. Guidelines for robotic carts streaked the floor, curving into one hatch after another. Through the open hatches, she could see long arrays of equipment that meant nothing to her. Cylinders and inverted cones, racks of nozzles mounted overhead on tracks, great blank-faced cubes with warning logos on them. Ahead of her, the passage ended in a sealed hatch. Esme glanced again at her notes. The ship's computer evidently thought this passage continued. And perhaps it did, past the obstruction. No admittance without authorization, in yellow on red. And Esme suspected that some of the little gleaming knobs on the hatch seal were actually video sensors. She retraced her way to the longitudinal passage and followed the indirect path suggested by Patak's cube. It took longer than she'd expected. She kept being surprised at the size, and annoyed with herself for still being surprised. But she found Forming Workshop B where Patak's cube said it would be, and on this side, the obstruction looked like an ordinary hatch with the label Dye Storage. Esme glanced at her hand comp. Almost late. She would have to hurry, and she was on the other side of the ship from territory she was already thinking of as home. She didn't bother to compare Patak's data with the ship's own this time. She jogged forward on the port side main passage, back around the hub passage, popped into the first passenger tube, and fetched up at her assigned mess only just in time. Here, she found that lieutenants were expected to head a table of jigs and ensigns. She had met none of them yet. They introduced themselves politely, and she tried to sort out names and faces. She said little, listening to them and hoping to find out something to make them memorable. The light-haired ensign on the left had a scrape on his left hand. Surely by the time it healed, she'd have another reason to know him. The jigs seemed a bit stiff, as if they were afraid of her. They must have heard about the court-martial, but was that all?
Lieutenant Sweeza, did you really meet Admiral Serrano?
That was an ensign, not the blonde one, but a thin, dark young man with green eyes. Custis, his name tag said.
Yes, I did.
Ensign Custis opened his mouth to say more, but the blonde ensign elbowed him visibly, and he shut it again. A brief silence followed, during which Esme ate steadily. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see Custis glancing at her from time to time.
You know her grandson's on board, Baron Serrano.
Toby?
That was the blonde. Esme didn't rise to that bait, but she did wonder if coincidence or Serrano influence had anything to do with a young Serrano's assignment. One of the jigs further down the table looked up.
If you'd eat without talking, you wouldn't get your foot in your mouth.
Esme looked up in time to see a look pass from that jig to another one. Something mysterious, which would no doubt end up on her shoulders. She put her fork down. Her appetite had disappeared.
Admiral Serrano's a very interesting person.
That was always safe, she hoped. From the startled looks of the two jigs, perhaps it wasn't.
Not that it wasn't an alarming situation.
Now everyone was looking at her. A year ago, she might have felt her face flushing, but the publicity around the court-martial had taken care of that. She smiled around the table.
Any of you ever serve with Admiral Serrano?
No, sir. But she's a Serrano, and they're all pretty much alike.
From his tone, Esme knew exactly what he didn't know. For the first time, she realized she could enjoy this.
I don't think I'd put it that way. Frankly, having served under both of them, Admiral Vita Serrano, that is, and Commander Harris Serrano, I thought them quite individual. Nor is the difference all seniority.
But isn't Commander Serrano, Harris Serrano, that is, the Admiral's niece?
What precisely are you suggesting?
Well, you know, they all stick together. Being related so close, I mean.
Esme had not imagined that kind of prejudice aimed at anyone but fleet outsiders like herself, those who had enlisted from some planet. The Serranos were fleet royalty, one of the 14 private military forces that had combined into the regular space service of the Familius Regnant. If there were serious resentment of the Serranos, and possibly some of the other first 14, someone should know. She should know, and she should not lose her temper and shove this brash youngster's face in the stew. Her temper bucked like one of the green colts in training, and she wrote it down, hoping her eyes showed none of the strain.
I think with a little more experience, you won't either think or say things like that, Jig Callison.
Callison turned red and looked down. Conversation naturally died, and she pretended to eat the rest of her dinner. When the senior lieutenant tapped on his glass for attention, Esme felt more relief than curiosity. She found it hard to keep her attention on the announcements of who had the duty and almost missed her introduction. She stood, off balance mentally, if not physically, and nodded to the faces that seemed only pale and dark blurs. After the meal, she left for her quarters as soon as she could. She was annoyed with herself for her immediate prickly response to the mention of the Serrano name and puzzled at her blurry perceptions. Usually, she could focus on new people without much trouble. When she thought about it, she realized that she had actually run about 30 standard hours without sleep. Her transport ship had come in on its own schedule, skewed a full shift and a half from the Kosciusko. Ship lag. Luckily, she never had much trouble with it. One night's sleep seemed to rearrange her internal timer. But right now, she wanted that sleep badly. She wasn't on the watch schedule yet, so she set her personal timer to allow 10 hours. Her compartment filtered out most of the noises. She could just hear the bass thump of someone's music cube. She didn't like it, but it wouldn't keep her awake. She logged off the status board and stretched out on her bunk. She had just time to wonder if she would have nightmares when she fell asleep. Beside her, Pelly leaned out to toss a gas grenade into the passage. A blue line traced the air just above his head, and he jerked back. Esme pressed the filter snugly into her nostrils and peered through the helmet visor. When the smoke obscured normal vision, her helmet sensors gave her a wiggly, false-color view of the corridor. She snaked out into it, hoping that whoever'd been shooting at them didn't have a similar helmet. They thought they'd gotten to the locker before the traitors, but none of the juniors knew how many helmets were supposed to be in that locker. Ahead, someone braced into an angle of a hatch, weapon at ready. Esme couldn't see the features.
Get this bunch of little fuckers and we'll only have Dover to worry about.
She braced her own weapon. The wiggly pink and green image blew apart. Something wet and warm splashed her arm. She ignored it. Through the dense, stinging fog, she slithered on, attention focused on the helmet's input, aware that behind her, Pelly and the others followed, that somewhere, Major Dovir still led the few other loyalist officers. The fog lifted in ragged wisps. Ahead, she could see the scorched lines on the bulkheads. She did not look at the deck, except when she had to, where she would have fallen over obstructions. But even so, she saw them. Heaps of old clothes, dirty and stained, scattered here and there. She would not think of it now. She would not. Later was soon enough. Esme woke in a sweat, heart pounding. Later was now, when she was safe. She turned on her bedlight and lay staring at the overhead. They had not been heaps of clothes. She had known it even then. Her father had been all too right. Warfare was ugly no matter where. Guts and blood and flesh stank the same in a spaceship as in the aftermath of a street riot. And she herself had added to that stench, that ugliness. She and the other juniors had fought their way up the ship onto the bridge, where Dovir, mortally wounded, held the command chair after Hearn was dead. Dovir, his guts slipping out of his hands, had given her that one glazed look, his voice struggling for control as he gave his last orders. She blinked, trying not to cry. She had cried. It didn't do any good. She felt slimy all over, the sweat cold and slick now, the bedclothes damp and tangled around her. According to the chronometer, she had slept a solid 7 hours. She could try for another short nap, but experience suggested that she wouldn't really sleep. Better would be a shower. It was late third shift on this ship, and an early start on the working day. No one was in the big shower room. She let the hot water warm her and wash away the fear stink. Still, nothing was moving as she came back down the passage. Not her alarm. She had carefully shut hers off. She made it into her compartment before those alarms stopped. When she emerged, it was to find two bleary-eyed ensigns on their way to the showers and a jig leaning on the bulkhead folding down the top flap of his uniform boot.
Sir!
They all came to more or less upright posture. Esme nodded, feeling the momentary glow of virtue that accompanies an early rising, clean teeth, and the evidence that one's associates are still half asleep. She did not let herself dwell on that. She had work to do. Not only learning the ship, as Major Patak had said, but figuring out why the Major's data cube and the ship's records were so different. All that day, except for hurried meals, Esme mapped the real ship against two dissimilar records. Major Patak's data cube was right except once, far in the bow end of T1, Deck 13, when neither fit the reality. A hatch had disappeared completely, replaced by a bulkhead painted in garish stripes. As Esme stood there, wondering what the pattern meant, A bald senior chief bustled out of the nearest cross passage and hurried toward her.
What are you... excuse me, sir. Can I help you find something?
Esme had not missed the tension. Something was clearly going on. But it was not yet her job to find it.
I'm Lieutenant Sweeza. Major Patak told me to familiarize myself with the entire ship by 0800 on the 27th, and I thought there was a hatch up here to the electronics warehouse facility.
Oh, Major Patak. Well, sir, the ship's database hasn't caught up to renovations. The electronics warehouse access is up that way. I'll be glad to show it to you.
Thanks. This bulkhead pattern, is it something they didn't teach us, or...?
It's probably unique to DSR ships, Lieutenant. They're so big, you see. The captain's permitted some non-reg markings to keep newbies oriented.
I see. Very sensible. I've gotten lost several times already.
Most people do, Lieutenant. That pattern just lets people know that what the ship's schematics show isn't there anymore. They haven't gone the wrong way, exactly, but the way's changed.
Esme followed the chief outboard, then forward again, to a hatch clearly labeled Electronics Warehouse Facility. Under that official label was another. Check out with duty, chief, before you remove any parts. This means you.